Could you slow that down? I'm lost as to why.
This was a guy who was an organized crime intelligence when I was on loan to those guys.
Right.
Knowing that they were lying to me, setting me up to be burglarized, killed, shot at, threatened, and all the stuff that was happening. Who I said was CIA, and they said, you're crazy, he has no connection to CIA.
Why are they nixing a CIA off on a petty moonlight insurance?
Who knows why this happened? I have no idea, but it happened, and I caught it. You know? Sometimes the heavens smile on the unfortunate. Okay. Now, we get to where a lot of this stuff really broke. This is a story. This, by the way, came off an L.A. Times computer given to me by David Rosen's wife. Ben Bradley Jr., Boston Globe. This is off LexisNexis. A long story, 1987. H. Ross Perot said to have asked for probe of U.S. official, Texas industrialist, Assistant Secretary of Defense involved in the recent transfer of arms in the CIA for sale to Iran, was involved in narcotics traffic and weapons smuggling scheme dating to the early 70s in Vietnam. This is about Richard L. Armitage. Richard L. Armitage, by the way, is Colin Powell's white son. Colin Powell was up to his eyeballs in Iran-Contra. Okay. This story goes on for 8 pages, and it talks about Ted Shackley, Richard Secord, Richard Armitage, Tom Klein, Ed Wilson, all the CIA names we know so well, Felix Rodriguez, and how Ross Perot found out about this. Now, you know Ross Perot's about that tall. Okay, I know Ross Perot. Don't hold it against me. He's got some good points. Richard Armitage is 6'4" and bench presses 400 pounds. Ross Perot walked into the Pentagon when he got this information on Armitage and backed him up into a corner and said, you're a disgrace to this country. He went to George Bush and said, you got to fire that guy. You got to get rid of him. You can't make him Secretary of Defense. Bush was going to make him Secretary of Defense. Bush threw Ross Perot out of the White House. 1986. You think that's motive for a short, floppy-eared Texan with a big nose to run and split the Republican vote to deny George Bush re-election? Possibly. Possibly. I've spoken to Ross Perot several times. I was his press spokesman here in 92. I wrote to him, and he called me one day. Phone rings. Marcus Ross Perot, how are you? It was, you know. And I was, he said, Mike, I want you to know I read every word you sent me. I must know 30 or 40 military officers, former law enforcement officers who have discovered CIA dealing drugs, and they've all had their lives ruined. They've been forced into bankruptcy, shot at, threatened, coerced. Their wives and children have left them. They're all broke. You'd think they try something different, but they don't because it works. And then I heard a blender. And then I heard genuine anguish in his voice. He said, you think with all of my resources I could do something about this, but I can't. They do the same thing with me, too, because it works. A guy with $3 billion. And I heard the anguish in his voice. This is also directly tied, these people, to the POWs who never came back from Southeast Asia. All right, now we're going to move on. I'm going to skip over a lot quickly, but this is an affidavit which was not written by a special forces colonel named Ed Cutolo. It's called the Cutolo Affidavit. He generated all the information, but he didn't write it because it was written after his death.
And there's
several ways that I've proved that. Everything is factual, though. Through what is now a stack of documents that thick, Stuart sees them, several other people have. 7 other supporting affidavits, other military records and documents, we bear everything out. This is a special forces colonel talking about how he took his troops under orders of CIA into Colombia and planted radar beacons so the cocaine flights could fly below radar into Panama. Full of cocaine for CIA. And he was present when the planes were met by Mungo Noriega, Edwin Wilson, Michael Harari of the Israeli Mossad. Okay, this is a long affidavit. It talks about massive domestic surveillance and the murder of many people. 5 special forces colonels have been murdered because they tried to come forward with this. Cutolo, Baker, Rowe, Malvesti, and Bayard. About 25 other people, including Archbishop Romero, were murdered when they got too close to CIA stuff. There's a former special forces troop, Bill Tyree, who's in prison for the murder of his wife, who was on those missions. He didn't murder his wife. They know it's kind of like Geronimo. Okay, they had witnesses, including cops, under surveillance, with Tyree under surveillance, proving that he was not at the murder scene, who saw his wife murdered by another guy, yet they convicted him of the murder. This is what we're getting, or what Tyree is getting, and you know what the black marks mean, right?
No.
The black mark means it's top secret. They won't tell you what's in there. Classified. These are all U.S. Army and CIA documents discussing the truth of the Watchtower. These are the Watchtower missions that I confronted John Deutsch with. Okay? That are all blacked out. Okay, there's page after page of this. We can prove Watchtower easily. The CIA even wrote, and you can see that's a CIA letterhead. CIA right there? Okay, CIA first said to Tyree, who's now been in prison for 18 years for a murder he didn't commit, there was no Watchtower. And this is a letter they wrote him. The date is 92, I believe. Now look at what's in the box here. Concerning item 11A, we are currently processing a request received prior to yours on Watchtower. If you wish, we can send you the same CIA-originated material, if any is released. About a month after Tyree got this, the agency contacted him and said, can we have our last letter back? Okay. There is a Watchtower. Okay. Now I want to turn to the biggest case here now. What do you think this guy did for a living? NYPD detective. Okay. Colonel Albert Vincent Caron worked on the French Connection and the Prince of the City cases. I have held this man's personal phone book in my hand. He died in 1990 of the CIA flu, chemical toxicity of unknown etiology. Okay. Long protracted illness. His brain just kind of disintegrated from within and centered his liver. I've held this man's phone book in my hands. And in it you find the names of CIA people like Paul Helliwell, General Richard Stilwell. You also, I found the home address and phone number for a guy named William Casey in Long Island, Locust Valley, Long Island. The very next entry was Paulie Castellano. You know who Paulie Castellano was? The head of the Gambino crime family. This man was the laundryman for CIA cocaine profits during Iran Contra. He was one of several. Okay, he died in 1990, and he also held the rank of full colonel. He retired from NYPD in 1980 and moved to New Mexico. Took his whole family, his daughter's son, and I know his daughter extremely well. Every record of this man when he died disappeared. His NYPD pension, his NYPD badge, his military records, his New Mexico driver's license, his car registrations, his bank accounts, insurance policies, joint bank accounts held with his daughter, everything disappeared. About $280,000 worth of insurance policies and about $30,000 in joint checking account with his daughter. His daughter was stuck with $40,000 in medical bills and not a penny left of the guy's name. Senator Pete Domenici, who's also one of the crooked and the ugly, wrote Dee and his daughter a letter saying, well, maybe he rented the uniform and he never was in the military. Okay, well, maybe he rented a uniform 12 years earlier as a major, being careful to replicate the same decorations. I don't think so. Yeah, this is one of his passport pages. These are samples of his passport stamps. This is JFK. This is London Heathrow. This is Nassau, the Bahamas. That's a money laundering site. Okay. His partner, James Robert Strauss, who I've just come across some really, in the last week or two, some damning information, had a company. Now, this is page 1 of 5 in a court suit. Now, there were 5 pages of travel records, and you got to understand that these travel records from American Airlines were taking place like every day. Here's the date. 9-18, 9-26, 9-26, 9-26, 9-25, 9-26, 9-26, 9-18, 9-25. All employees of Strauss, Downing & Associates, an insurance agency in Albuquerque that sells fire and casualty life insurance, and life insurance policies in New Mexico. Where are they going? We got 5 pages showing destinations of Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, Cincinnati, Johannesburg, Dharan, Frankfurt, Vienna, New Orleans, Budapest, Las Vegas, Taipei, Kuala Lumpur, Hong Kong, Paris, Madrid, Rome, the Jersey Islands, money laundering. Okay? I know where Strauss is, and that's something I got to hold on to because that's something I may testify about. Now, when I went to meet Dee, and I went through all of this evidence about Corona, I listened to everything, and I gathered about 40 to 50 pages of support documentation on this guy. This guy used to come home and say, Richard Secord is such an asshole. Oliver North, if you don't forget, anything. Remember the name John Caffey? By the way, John Caffey is the name that Terry Reed met Oliver North under. Remember the name Amadeus, the mission Amadeus? Remember George Bush? This man talked about Elliot Abrams, and this his daughter knew because to her, Santos Traficante was Uncle Sonny. Santos Traficante went to Southeast Asia for the agency to get heroin during the Vietnam War. She knew a ton of New York mobsters. And she heard her father get phone calls, and it was always Amadeus the trigger. Now she's got Strauss on tape saying that Amadeus is George Herbert Walker Bush. Okay? I met with Dee and spent time with her, and we're really dear friends, and I don't believe that the sons of the father should be visited on the daughter. You know, she's a sweetheart. Her father was an asshole, pardon my French. Okay, but I love her dearly. And after watching all this stuff and looking at all this evidence, I said, there's only one man that I can think of that you need to talk to. His name is Ted Shachtman. He ran the CIA station in Miami that was after Castro. He ran the station in Laos where they dealt drugs. He was station chief in Saigon. He ran covert operations in Iran and Pakistan. He was involved in Iran-Contra. He is the longest-running, high-ranking CIA guy I knew of. So he tracks down Ted Shachtman. She finds Robert Mayhew, believe it or not, who sends her to Ted Shachtman. She complains to Shachtman about what happened. Her father had been buried as a staff sergeant, his highest rank in World War II. Within 10 days of her contacting Ted Shachtman, his headstone was changed to full colonel. And she got a copy of the order directing the change from the Pentagon. She actually stole it. Shachtman did that for her. Okay. Has anybody here heard of the Tatum Chronicles? Chip Tatum? Major CIA witness who was turning up now, who was just turned up like in the last year, okay, who was flying on missions, who flew into Mena, Arkansas, where they were, believe me, millions and millions of dollars of cocaine was being flown through Mena, Arkansas by the agency. Chip Tatum and I have been talking, and we just met recently. I mailed Chip this picture. The first picture of Caron. Didn't tell him anything about the guy. He said, Colonel Vincent. I knew him as Colonel Albert Vincent. The guy's name was Albert Vincent Caron. Everybody uses 20 names. We start talking. He describes the guy perfectly. New York accent. He says, you know, I've got to dig this up, but I've got a picture of this man taken April 12, 1985 in Honduras with George Bush. I'm waiting to see the picture. I'm waiting to see if Chip stays alive long enough to find it and get it to me, or if I stay alive long enough to hold on to it. Okay, if the picture surfaces. But he identified this man as having been with George Bush. Testimony. I was there. I saw. He was posing as George Bush's doctor, believe it or not. Okay? I don't want to go to the other side of the coin. Colonel Jim Sabo. Chief of Air Operations at El Toro Marine Air Station. Now, in that position, he was in command of the Marine Corps Air Station Yuma and Marine Corps Air Station El Toro and the Yuma Proving Grounds. He came across evidence, clear evidence, in 1990 that CIA was flying drugs onto his bases. In C-130s, we're not talking about 100 pounds. We're talking about 2,000 kilos out of crack. No pun intended, okay, onto his base. He was murdered January 12, 1991. Then January 21st, 1991. They ruled it a suicide. Even though he was knocked unconscious from behind and a shotgun was shoved so far in his mouth it sheared off his uvula, and he aspirated blood for 10 minutes before his brain was blown out, meaning he was unconscious when he was shot, they ruled it a suicide. In my work, I have come across something like 190 mysterious suicides in the military. Stalin had purges, why can't we? Okay. I'm not sure they're all connected to that, but many of them I know were connected to CIA and drugs. Now, I want to stop there real quickly. Is there any evidence? Did I connect? Do you think there's evidence that CIA deals drugs? Somebody say something, please.
I missed the steps.
Okay. Now, I want to tell you how they're playing us. I want to read you something. And I knew this was going to happen. This is from this book. I spent many lunch monies on this $50 law book. Okay? National security laws. It came out just a year ago. Okay? It has many court cases relevant to national security. What I'm going to read you is from a decision rendered in the U.S. Appellate Court in Washington, D.C. Cases Hobson versus Wilson, U.S. Court of Appeals, District of Columbia Circuit, 1984, this judgment was rendered. This had to do with COINTELPRO. Anybody know what COINTELPRO is? I know Mike does, he's been a victim. CIA had a parallel operation to COINTELPRO known as CHAOS. During the war years, FBI and CIA were out to get all the dissenters, all the people challenging the government. And in this case, Hobson was suing the government, and they finally, by some miracle, extracted these highly classified documents out of FBI, which is, this is COINTELPRO, but the CIA operation was exactly parallel. This is what they found. This is what the court said. Secret FBI memoranda from the late 60s and early 70s revealed the truest purpose of COINTELPRO, and by inference, the CIA's parallel operation, CHAOS. These documents finally surfaced in this case. Quote, among the primary goals of COINTELPRO was the prevention of coalitions among black nationalist groups and between black nationalist groups and the predominantly white New Left. Thus, the COINTELPRO black nationalist program was intended to prevent militant black nationalist groups and leaders from gaining respectability by discrediting them to three separate segments of the community. It sought to promote political differences within New Left organizations and between New Left and black organizations, and to exploit opportunities to foment animosity. Quote, the result as disclosed by the trial record was at least four categories of activity interfering with plaintiffs' legal protest activities. One, efforts to create racial animosity between blacks and whites. Two, interference with lawful demonstration logistics. Three, efforts to create discord within groups or to portray a group's motives or goals falsely to the public. And four, direct efforts to intimidate the plaintiffs. When the Gary Webb stories broke, the immediate spin put on all of this was that a bunch of crazy blacks in South Central Los Angeles were alleging that CIA agents were standing on the corner of 82nd and Hoover selling drugs directly to get black people hooked. I went on the Michael Jackson show while the Gary Webb story was running, and I said, I don't know about CIA agents standing on a corner in South Central. I know about CIA bringing in thousands and thousands and thousands of kilos all over this country. A lot of it went to South Central. But you can't support the allegation that a CIA guy was selling it directly in South Central. I don't think they cared. I think they were happy to see it go there, and crack made it sell all the faster. I think that's clear. But the spin got put on. And what did the press say? And what did the Senate say? Those crazy minorities are prone to conspiracy theories, aren't they? And what did the whites say? Hey, it was just happening to them damn blacks. Well, it was happening all over the country. Ricky Ross, in the course of 4 years of dealing drugs, sold 4 tons of cocaine. That's a lot of coke, isn't it? One CIA drug ring in Mexico, Angel Felix Gallardo and Rafael Caro Quintero, were selling 4 tons a month. And those are the guys that killed Kiki Camarena. And that doesn't touch John Hull. It doesn't touch Noriega. It doesn't touch Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas. It doesn't touch all the other CIA. It doesn't touch what Celi Castillo was seeing at Ilopango. There was too much drugs just to have been sent to South Central. A lot of it was set aside to go to South Central with deliberately racist intentions, but the spin got put on that it was the blacks. Why? To keep the blacks from aligning with the whites. Because they know in Washington that this issue is never going to get solved until blacks and whites can stand and hold hands together. So what do? They keep us apart. And that's their strategy right there. You just heard it. And they're playing the same thing right now. When the Gary Webb stories got retracted, it wasn't retracted, corrected. The corrections came when the San Jose Mercury News said, well, we really didn't have enough proof to show that CIA was deliberately targeting South Central. Get the point? Hence, we throw the whole story out. That makes perfect sense to me, doesn't it to you? We're being played like suckers at a carnival. And we fall for it. We fall for it all the time. We've been falling for it for years. And I knew this was going to happen. And I said before, And it's happened within our own coalition. I said before, this wasn't about genocide. The British colonized China 350, 400 years ago with opium. What happened? How did they do that? You know why? Because China was unified with one emperor, a strong country. It had tea and silk and all these spices and all these things that the British wanted. And the emperor in the unified China said, you can't have them for the price you want to pay. So the British started smuggling in opium and hooked the population. And by the way, it has nothing to do with race, because anywhere a colonizing power has injected addictive opium or cocaine, the population got hooked. Black, white, brown, yellow, Oriental, doesn't make any difference. That's a law that they know it works everywhere. So what happened in China? As soon as the British stuck in the opium, China broke up and you had all these warlords running around fighting each other, and the British got exactly what they wanted. What happened when the cocaine turned up in South Central? When I was a cop on the streets here, there were two gangs. Actually three. The Crips, the Brims, and the Pyrus. And they only fought each other. They never fought between themselves. By 1984-85, you had 100 sets in this city fighting each other. The warlords, broken up, divide and conquer, fight. And once again, they got exactly what they want. People divided, people afraid of each other, people not trusting, people saying it's a black problem, it's not a white problem. And as long as we're doing that, we're all Ben Franklin said, we must all hang together or else we shall surely hang separately. Now, I'm privileged to walk equally with respect among groups on the far left, you know, and I can walk into South Central, and I talk to Maxine's office, and I can walk into the far right. And you know what? You guys are all saying the same damn thing. The same thing. You know? I'm not endorsing one left or right. I'm still a cop just trying to put bad guys in jail. And I'm watching how all of my support and all of the people who are just so gullible are just going to let around and fish. Saying exactly the same thing. The problem is that there's many reasons to say many different things. There's many other issues. But I have always maintained that CIA dealing drugs was the easiest case to prove. And if we could just unite one time on one issue, we could crack the door with this case. Because there's a ton of evidence. I put 20 years of my life into this. Okay? And I'm not very hopeful today. I'll tell you why I'm not very hopeful. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know how. Some miracle, you know, who knows. And maybe I'm a John the Baptist. Maybe someday. And that's the other problem I see, that everybody's always looking for a Messiah. And I am not a Messiah. I don't want to be a Messiah. I don't intend to be. That's the wrong way to approach this, because I get tired of people looking for me to do for them what they ought to be doing for themselves. Once you guys know this, you can talk about it just as well as anybody else, because you have the same rights I do. We're all citizens. That's the common ground we start from. So I think I'll shut up there if I haven't piqued anybody's interest, and take questions, and we'll go as long as you want to go. Dave, you had a question?
Yeah, you mentioned the Trafficante that was towards the end of your lecture.
Yes.
That was doing some work with the CIA. Is that the same guy that's involved in the Miami mob?
Absolutely. Uncle Sonny, Santos Trafficante, was kind of a really unique relationship. Lucky Luciano, Santo Trafficante, and Meyer Lansky were like the three biggest mafia figures throughout the 40s. Santos stayed extremely powerful in the southern region. Carlos Marcelo, the mafia don, even answered to Santos Trafficante. In 1968, Santos Trafficante went, courtesy of CIA, to Laos, Cambodia, and Burma. You know, was protected by them, and that was right into the Golden Triangle. So Trafficante was also extremely involved when Castro took over Cuba in the early efforts of CIA to kick Castro out so that the mob could get their casinos back and do their money laundering. Remember I mentioned in World War II, in the early part of World War II, we had these blockades, right? I mean, we were in war. We thought the Germans were going to land and the Japs were going to land. Our borders were sealed. The population of addicts almost went away completely. So did the demand, believe it or not. Okay? So interdiction is successful. Okay? So if we can ever confront this issue, and it's going to be bloody ugly when we do, if we can ever confront this issue, we can look to a sharp reduction in the addict population, just as a result of drying up the supply. Okay? Stuart.
I have a question. From your talk, it's clear that the CIA contra crack connection isn't unique. And the CIA has been dealing drugs historically. Can you talk about how the crack epidemic might have unique aspects? I've heard talk of you know, coke, a lot, large quantities provided on consignment, that there seemed to be a deal between the Medellin cartel going to the east and the Contra coming to the west. Was there something different about the crack epidemic?
Yes, I think there was. And, you know, and I do have to say that I do believe that the guys in CIA were acting from racist motives, but the whole CIA involvement in drug trafficking was not specifically and exclusively directed at minorities. That's where I draw the distinction. Ricky Ross was fronted a lot of cocaine. The unique thing about crack...
But did that happen earlier with the Gambino families? Did they, with heroin,
no.
Did they operate that way?
Well, who knows how the mob worked? I mean,
was there a marketing scheme like Flandone worked out?
Okay, no. First, you have to understand the whole history, because drug trafficking is basically something that's created only by outlawing something. You can't create the trade until you make it illegal to do something. So, like it was with prohibition and booze. That's, you know, how Bronfman and Kennedy and all of those guys, you know, made their money from Al Capone. The organized crime connections with heroin. Heroin was always pretty much a straightforward commodity. Opium, you smoked in a pipe. When you refined opium, you got first morphine, then diacetylmorphine, which is heroin. Okay? Heroin, then, you would cook up in a spoon and shoot. It's always been that way. You get a spoon of heroin, you know, and you might get two hits from a spoon, depending upon how good this stuff was. On Island Street, it's Mexican ground. That's always worked the same way, only the price has gone up and down. Okay? Cocaine's different. Cocaine was really not really well known. I mean, it was a drug used by musicians and some really wealthy people, you know, and a few eccentrics through the 70s. When I was sent to the DEA school in 1976, now check this out. The official policy of the Drug Enforcement Administration was that the least addictive and least harmful drug of all, including marijuana, was cocaine. They were setting the stage for what was coming. Okay? Cocaine at the time that I was on the street, 76, 77, was running, my God, it was probably 250 a gram. Really expensive stuff, but there wasn't much around. By the time crack appeared, coke was going for maybe 50 for a half G. Okay? Still, that was out of the price range of people in South Central Los Angeles, or poor people. Okay? What happened was that crack gave you a $10 hit, which gave you this monstrously intense high, but it wore off after about 30 minutes. It was the perfect psychological vehicle to addict poor people. Just like the little knobs of opium were. Just like it worked with GIs in Southeast Asia. You could buy some of Nguyen Cao Ky's heroin right outside of Da Nang for $2. Okay, or some of his opium, which you would smoke. Okay, or the heroin, which you would for $2. But a six-pack of beer would cost you $5. Well, shit, what's the logical choice, man? So, that psychology works everywhere, regardless of the race to which it is applied. But if you got to understand this about crack. Crack wasn't some major discovery in 1980. Crack was literally turning cocaine back into what it was when it was called basuco. When they first crushed the leaves in the pit, they come out with a cocaine base. And they had addicts in Bolivia and Peru and Ecuador and all these countries in South America that would smoke the paste, and that's crack. And that was before they turned it into powder. See? So what happened when you cooked it with baking soda and ether and all the stuff that you do here to make crack cocaine was literally turning it back into the chemical form that it was when it was first crushed out of the coca leaf. So the process was very well known. Was there a genocidal plot behind that? My answer to that is I would take the same position that the U.S. Supreme Court took in the Brown versus Board of Education case in 54. What, you say? In 54, the Supreme Court said, we don't have to decide whether segregation existed in school systems as a result of an intentional act. We can say that it has, that there is de facto segregation, because all the blacks live here and all the blacks live there. We're not going into the intention. I think this, I would take the same position with South Central. But 4 tons a month couldn't be consumed if every person in South Central Los Angeles was smoking 24 hours a day. That had to go to whites and Latinos, American Indians and everybody else in the country. So that's kind of, did I help?
But what do we know about the consignment? Or the
Ross was fronted a lot of cocaine. There is no question about that. That was done by Blandon. Okay. And certainly Meneses was aware of it. Ricky, you know, had been a little bit active beforehand. I mean, it wasn't like he was a virgin when all this started. You know, so they knew they had a, you know, a reasonably okay player, you know, who was going to go out and sell the stuff, and so on. Cocaine has been fronted. Enormous quantities, yes, were fronted to him. But see, Blandon was given orders. When CIA sends case officers out to do something, they might send three or four case officers into a country with three or four groups of agents under their control. And they might say, your objective is to X, okay, whatever it is. Infiltrate the government. Infiltrate the defense ministry. One case officer may recruit a bevy of prostitutes, female. One case officer may recruit a bevy of homosexual prostitutes. One case officer may try to get the guy gambling. You see what I'm saying? They're really goal-oriented. So CIA was put out this mission. First, Ronald Reagan and George Bush took all the checks off the national security establishment with the Contra War. They said, support the Contras and fund them any way you can. And all of these crooks from CIA had now walked right into absolute power. Okay? And the mission was to generate cash. Okay? So the CIA set out to generate cash. Blandon had marketing training, as I recall, here in the States at MIT or someplace. He had a degree in marketing, for God's sake. So he just applied his skill. His mission was to generate cash. Okay? And he said, South Central, there's a ton of money down there. I can do it with crack. Let's go get it. Screw them, you know, people down there. And that's probably the way it went.
I just wanted to throw in a few other things. Obviously, there are a lot of different perspectives. And from the perspective of part, let's say, because I don't want to speak for the crack the CIA coalition, but I think that some of the things you have to look at is the period of time, what was going on in the world as this began to develop here in Los Angeles. And it's not a coincidence that they were using this to attack the Nicaraguan Revolution, because as you look at what was happening in the period in the late 70s, as that revolution came to power, the forces that we're talking about were actually on the defensive in the world. I mean, the CIA, the U.S. government, there were a lot of victories being won. You talked about the Shah of Iran. Of course, the Shah of Iran was also overthrown in that period. There was a revolutionary struggle going on in Iran, and they already had people who were working with Khomeini while they were still trying to prop up the Shah. I mean, right. These are very far-sighted people that we're talking about. The CIA had a lot of irons in the fire. So, but they very much wanted to destroy the Nicaraguan Revolution. They very much wanted to put the finishing touches on the Black liberation struggle in this country. This was a period of time when there was, in fact, a reassertion. The late 70s, early 80s, there was renewed activity of the Black Liberation Army, for example, in this country. They targeted, for example, Dr. Fethullah Shakur, who was someone who had been a leader of the Black Liberation Movement for many, many years, and in particular led something called BANA, which was the Black Acupuncture Association of North America, which was using acupuncture anesthesia as a method of treatment and detoxification for addicts. And Dr. Shakur led a movement around the slogan, you have to replace the desire to get high with the desire to be free, and was having very, very effective political and social organizing of addicted populations in the Black community. He was identified as a COINTELPRO target long after they swore the COINTELPRO no longer existed. So they were targeting the Nicaraguan Revolution because they had to break that revolution. They saw an upsurge in liberation movements continuing. This is why Ronald Reagan came in as president.
Right.
And so, in this country, in this same period of time, they did put forward a fairly open doctrine coming out of the Trilateral Commission that the problems of the United States, a destabilization they saw going in this country, had to do with too many gains, too much democracy, what they called an excess of democracy. And specifically, they targeted Black and Hispanic populations for what they called spatial deconcentration. And this went on all around the United States and in Los Angeles. And the effect of it in Los Angeles was the deindustrialization that we've seen, the destruction of the economic base in South Central Los Angeles, and then You have a generation of young people with no assessments except the drugs that they're brought in. So I'm not saying that it was not, I agree, it was not exclusively targeted at the black community, but there was a social struggle going on in the world, and they saw very clearly that there were forces inside this country that they were very much afraid would align with international forces that they saw building up. So it, in my mind, there's no coincidence that this exact operation of crack cocaine, the Contras, guns into the, and it was not just drugs. Some of the stuff that came out in the Gary Webb article was about bringing weapons into the community to arm these warlords. And to substitute, they have a very conscious strategy that's called the pseudo-gang strategy that they've put out in all their stuff about how to deal with the potential of revolutionary formations growing up, is that you create counter-revolutionary armed organizations that can create chaos. And the same thing happened in earlier periods with some of the gang activity they used to counter the Black Panther Party. So they were ahead of the curve on some of this. I do believe that they saw a potential for developments in this country getting out of hand. And if you read some of the anti-immigrant stuff from the same period, that some of these people specifically said that they saw Nicaragua as a fuse to ignite the bomb of Mexico that would blow up in this area. So I do believe that there was very conscious targeting of the Black and Latino communities. I agree that it spread out very, very widely, and I think that white people inevitably are going to become victimized in the same way, that because we live in an empire, everybody becomes a subject. We can't, Mike said we're all citizens, but I think the fact is that none of us are citizens anymore. None of us have the prerogatives of what citizenship really means
anymore. We're all idiots.
Because we're living in an empire, and we're all subjects of an empire, and I think this process of disillusionment hopefully will lead us to the kind of unity that Mike has talked about.
By way of supporting what he said real quickly, Chip Tatum has on his website, and I have the address, he has a tape that he says he made while he was flying Michael Harari and Buddy Young, Bill Clinton's director of security, who was working CIA the whole time, in which Harari says, and this is a quote, a lot of this cocaine is directed for South Central and for black communities, because what we're going to do is get all the niggers hooked and put them in prison. Quote. Okay? Now, and I believe it, but what I'm saying is that, oh my God, I watched the end result of that, that when something like that comes out, it's no longer an everybody problem anymore, it's solely a black problem, and we're all screwed again. You see what I'm saying? Because the drugs were going to white families as well. But, God, that's the way this disinformation works. It becomes solely something. Now, to support what you said, and this is a concern of the people on the far right, the conservatives, they're all really ticked off now about the communist Chinese, who were trying to buy the Long Beach Naval Base and turn it into sovereign Chinese territory. You guys know about that, Costco? Okay? They bought a huge parcel of land up near Palmdale. And they're going to ship tons and tons and tons and tons of goods if they get this going up an area straight through called the Alameda Corridor. Where does the Alameda Corridor run? Right through South Central. When was all that land purchased? When the property values were driven down. So we're talking about opposite ends of the same conspiracy here. Get the point? The right's worried about one part, the left's about the blacks over here, the whites over here, and we're all missing. It's one octopus strangling everybody. Okay?
Well, it's not just that whites use drugs also, but it's who's in the prisons.
And that's a whole separate.
But it's connected.
Works. Yes, it is.
And it is. We all hang together. It's so easy for the whites to think we all hang as long as all us good, upstanding people who never went to prison because we never did anything wrong hang together.
But as long as there's
bread, ignore a million people, a lot of them in prison, and it's really,
as long as there's breath in this body, I'm going to say I'm in no less danger than any black man and vice versa, and until we recognize common peril and act from a common basis, we're all units in this fight. We're not going to get anywhere until we can find the common basis. You first and then you, because you had your hand up longest.
I was just kind of curious why the San Jose Mercury news story came out. I've always kind of been curious. Am I supposed to think this just happens just because some news reporter stumbled upon it and published it, or?
Well, I know part of the genesis of that, and I'll tell you quickly. Patrick Formey, who runs the Center for the Preservation of Modern History and publishes Prevailing Winds up in Santa Barbara, is very tight with Oliver Stone and Andy Davis, who directed The Fugitive, and a lot of people with money look into this stuff. Very ardent progressives. And Patrick knew the former girlfriend of a major drug dealer and of Carlos Lederer, who was Oscar Daniel Blandón's ex-girlfriend. And she told him the story, and Patrick called Gary Webb. So I know that part of the genesis right there. Okay, and she came up with the stuff which Gary Webb started putting out. But I tell you, I had exactly the same question when that came up. Why did these stories come out? Because I don't believe, this is controlled media here we're talking about, folks. Everywhere, controlled. For those of you who don't know, when Capital Cities purchased ABC, William Casey was the senior lawyer for Capital Cities. Okay.
Does everybody know who William Casey is? Because
Ronald Reagan's director of Central Intelligence arranged the buyout of a major network by Capital Cities Broadcasting. Okay. The media is controlled. So I don't know. I've got a lot of questions about that myself. I wish I could answer that. I know Gary Webb personally. Okay.
What effect does it have for, like, for the CIA to suddenly come under attack?
See, what you're missing is the Hegelian dialectic of all of this. And the Hegelian dialectic from Hegel says that you create a problem so that you can solve the problem, and in solving the problem, get the results you want. CIA got attacked. They raised the Contra issue again, because it really hadn't died. The Christic Institute in 86 and 87 was 100 times bigger than the crack the CIA coalition was. So what I'm saying is the issue hadn't quite died, but they raised it up, then they knocked it down, and while they knocked it down, you know, they created some more racial tension in the country. So I don't know how it all works, okay? Because they know better, they got access to more information than I do. Yes,
but is the logical or the hope for outcome, you know, in the work that, you know, the crack the CIA coalition and you are doing, what kinds of audiences, in terms of, you know, church groups, in terms of more mainstream audiences, are we hopeful, and how, of reaching?
Abolishing CIA would not solve the problem, but I really kind of like what Jim Garrison said, that he didn't know if he changed anything, but they sure know that they had been danced with. You know, that we're not just all rolling down, laying down, rolling over, and saying, okay, let's have some fascism. And Mort Saul was a very famous comedian for a long time. He was one of Jim Garrison's deputies. He's been fighting this stuff for 30 years, and he's lost a wife. His son just died recently. And Mort said, the road to fascism is paved with liberal intentions. And he's absolutely right. Sieg Heil. Bear in mind here, we're going to have some time, if we're not all asleep, in the next 2 or 3 months, a really major opportunity to relight this and to prove to them that we aren't victims of their mind games. Remember I said that the Inspector General's offices of CIA and Department of Justice have committed to and are compelled to come back with their reports. Now, what you're going to see in September or October is going to be CNN, one of those newsreaders going, the Inspector Generals of the CIA and Department of Justice today announced that they had concluded their year-long investigation into recent allegations of CIA involvement in drug trafficking. Their report says, quote, we have found no evidence of any agency involvement after an exhaustive study, blah, 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 blah. Now, that's the opportunity. That's the chin. The future of this movement, the future of this issue, I think the future of free will in America is going to hinge upon what kind of reaction comes at that time. Now, we've got a couple things working in our favor. The Honorable Maxine Waters, and I do not believe she is a messiah. She is politically vulnerable. Her Records Act was just killed in committee. That was to declassify documents. But she has been a vociferous vocal pit bull on this issue. Now, picture coming back with no reports what Newt Gingrich and what the Republicans are going to say if she doesn't fight back. They're going to say, look at that crazy black bitch. She went out and stirred everybody up and there was nothing to it. She's not credible. That's what they're going to do to attack her. Do you think she's going to let that happen? She can't afford to let that happen. She's going to have to fight back with what she knows. Now, whether she fights back alone or with a lot of blacks and a lot of whites and a lot of people screaming behind her is a different story. I hope that she doesn't sell out just for parity in sentencing, because I would like a little justice after 20 years, and I know a few other people would. But the fight ain't over yet.